south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, been getting a lot of emails about the situation that's developing in Nicaragua now. You longtime listeners have heard me mention Nicaragua many times. I'm not real big on it, never was, for a lot of reasons that I went into on past shows. But it's a great place for gringos who've been scammed in Costa Rica to just slip right into, because it's got a border with Costa Rica. Turns out, as you've heard me say many times before, Costa Rica is very expensive now. I just talked to a guy living there just 3 or 4 days ago. He said it costs more to live in Costa Rica like a first world person than it does to live in New York City. And who did that, of course? Well, all the gringos flooding in, for sure. I mean, when they flood in, they want gringo niceties, gringo franchises, gringo imports, gringo food, appliances, and Costa Rica doesn't have a manufacturing base, so they have to import everything. Naturally, it's going to be more expensive than if you bought it up in the States. A lot more expensive. Why? Because you'll be paying Costa Rican import tax plus having the stuff shipped from the States or China or whatever. So it's been many years since Costa Rica's been off my list, and people have been scammed in Costa Rica. A lot of scamming of gringos there. They know how to twist us. When I lived there, I got scammed myself for around $25,000. But that was small time compared to some of my friends who got hit for over $500,000, almost always on land and building projects. The locals have had tons of practice scamming gringos, and there are plenty of con men there. And believe me, plane loads of naive gringos are piling in daily. And you don't have to swing a dead cat to find one who's been gouged or nailed in some kind of real estate deal. That's the most common rip-off scheme. So what do gringos and expats do after they've been ripped off a few times or gouged heavily? That depends. Well, there are countless cases of gringos and expats in Costa Rica whose financial resources have been drained. Problem is, oftentimes Costa Rica was their final destination and they sold many things up in the States or have nothing up there, so they can't go back and relive that first world lifestyle. They just haven't got the cash or the income. Hey, I've met quite a few of them myself. So instead, a lot of disgruntled gringos who've been gouged have opted for slipping into Nicaragua, which in a way is like Costa Rica was 20 or 25 years ago. So many of them did relocate there and they're still doing it. And then came that promised second sort of Panama Canal clone. Remember that? About 3 or 4 years ago? That was hot on everyone's radar, right? And that was sort of one of the precursors to what's happening in Nicaragua on the streets right now. Protesters everywhere, people dying. In some places, martial law. But I'll get to that in a little while. First, I want to hit some emails here. All right, this one comes from expat Edgar, and he's talking about gold and silver. He says, "Dear Johnny, you've often said that you keep a gold Canadian coin with you for emergency cash at all times. You've said you could take it to any Latino or Latin bank and exchange it for cash in emergency situations. At least, that's what I think you said. And you know, I was recently exchanging messages with a Latin lawyer about doing the same thing with U.S. silver coins, having some on hand for when the next shoe falls, the crap hits the fan, and we're in another depression-like situation. Well, anyway, Johnny, the lawyer said, I'd have to find a numismatic club somewhere because banks likely would not accept silver coins. I think you might have said something like that yourself, but the old cabeza can't always keep everything straight these days. Meanwhile, I'll be on the lookout for Latin American numismatics clubs. Muchos thancos, expat Edgar. Well, Edgar, you're right. I always carry a 1 ounce Canadian maple leaf with me. Had the same one in my little secret pouch for the last 27 or so years now. Just in case of an emergency that hasn't come yet, because I still have the coin. In fact, I've got 2 coins. I've got a 1 ounce silver maple leaf and a little quarter ounce silver maple leaf tucked away in that little pouch. In, by the way, a separate little plastic wrapper with a rubber band around it, pinned inside my little stealthy pouch. By the way, that's a little trick a lot of people use with passports and wallets and stuff. They wrap a rubber band or two around them, put them in their pockets, never back pockets, of course, remember. And those rubber bands will cause a lot of drag or friction every time you want to pull your wallet or passport out. In fact, sometimes it'll be such a pain you'll wonder why you put the rubber bands on it in the first place. But that's also a tremendous deterrent for any bad guy or girl that might happen to slip their hands into your pockets. Believe me, if you've got rubber bands around that stuff, you'll know when someone's tugging near your private parts. So try it. It's the cheapest kind of anti-pickpocket and theft insurance you can buy. What do they cost? A penny a piece? So anyway, I've got that little pouch with a 1 ounce and a quarter ounce Canadian maple leaf with two little rubber bands around it. One of those rubber bands clipped through a little safety pin, which is then clipped to the inside fabric of that little pouch. And you know, you'd be surprised how much that little package with that 1 ounce and quarter ounce gold piece weighs, even though it's only about an inch by an inch by an eighth of an inch wide. And believe me, when I first started carrying it around, many times I thought, what if this thing by its own weight, because I'm sitting down or laying on a couch or something, happens to slip out and my zipper in that little passport pouch is open a ways? Sometimes you'll notice when you're taking stuff in and out of it, the zippers open a tiny bit, maybe even an inch. Or an inch and a half, just enough for one of those pieces of gold to slip out. Now, that's very infrequent, but you're jostling around all day, so it's bound to happen once in a great while. Though it's something you don't want to happen. Which is why, again, I've got the double security of rubber bands and a little safety pin. Hey, it's lasted me 27 years in probably like 90 countries now. Oh, but not the safety pouch. I have to change that about every 5 or 6 years. And surprisingly enough, it's usually not the zipper that craps out. It's the pouch itself, the fabric, and sometimes the loop that goes around your belt. It slowly deteriorates like anything, especially since there's a little sweat. You're going to have a little of that if you got that tucked in your pants or whatever, because that's how it's done. There's a loop that wraps through your belt, then it drops into your pants. And the humidity in Latin America, especially if you're traveling in tropical zones, that'll definitely deteriorate the cloth and the stitching on that little pouch. Oh, and by the way, if you want to know the one that I'm currently using, had this one maybe 3 years now, I changed from a Samsonite, which is a really cool pouch that they don't make anymore, to one that's almost exactly like it, but with only one zipper instead of two. Anyway, just pop me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link and how to get that thing. I think it's only like $12. I'd say it's the second cheapest insurance for pickpocketers and such that you can buy. And the best? Number one? Why, rubber bands, of course. But back to expat Edgar's question about silver and gold coins in Latin America. It's true, you're not going to be able to go into a bank, even in the States, and pull out some silver or gold coins, even if they're very recognizable, like Canadian maple leafs or U.S. dimes, quarters, or half dollars, pre-1965, whatever. The fact is, most bank tellers these days were born after 1964. They've never actually touched one or seen one with their own beady little eyes. And they'll probably just have a look at them for historical interest and think you're a bit nuts. That is, unless the reset button has been pushed and that depression recession type situation kicks in. Then you can be sure most banks will be closed, so you probably wouldn't even get a chance to flash this stuff. However, every large and medium Latin city and small towns too have numismatics clubs. Yes, they're very popular down here. And you'll always be able to go on the internet and find one of these places. They're usually combined with antique shops or pawn shops, just like up in the States. In fact, all Latin American countries at one time did have their own silver and gold coins that floated freely in circulation, just like they did up in the States, and they slowly pulled them out, replaced them with useless base metals, as the U.S. did in 1965 with silver, and long before that, 1933 with gold, actually outright eliminating gold in circulation altogether and leaving basically silver, except for nickels and pennies, of course. And even U.S. pennies, they're not copper anymore. Just scratch one on the sidewalk and you'll see what I mean. Beneath that coppery color is not copper at all. I believe it's zinc, much cheaper than copper. Because, you know, there was a time around 20 years ago, I believe now, when a real U.S. penny, when they were all made out of copper, was actually worth more than 1 cent. Which meant back then, if you collected enough of them and took them to a scrap dealer, you could make money just by buying them by the roll at 1 cent a piece in a bank and turning them over to a scrap dealer who melts them down and gives you slightly more than what you paid for them at the bank. And it's not, you know, called money for nothing. It's called government-induced inflation. And you know what? People were doing that. So that's why the Treasury eliminated copper pennies. Though isn't it funny? They still copper flashed the outside of them just so people wouldn't say, hey, what the hell happened to my pennies? They're not copper anymore. In other words, it was the government once again trying to pull the wool out of your eyes, making you think they were copper, and they're really not. Just like many of the coins you'll find when you're traveling around the world in various countries. Take the euro coins, for example. They're mixed with an alloy that makes them look shiny and bright like gold, at least when you first get them. And they tarnish after a while, of course. And for sure they did that to make you think there's some kind of sparkling, intrinsic, precious metal value to them, like gold. Are we that stupid? Well, some of us are. In fact, one of the saddest moments of my life came when my mother told me, "Johnny, do you realize that 50% of the people in the world are below average, that is, having a below average IQ? Man, that makes you look at every other person in a different light." And worse yet, she said, "Johnny, they don't even know it." To which I said, "Mom, you know, maybe it's a good thing they don't." So, expat Edgar brought up an interesting subject. What do you do if you got gold and silver coins? And I always recommend very, very obvious and common ones like Canadian maple leaves and U.S. silver and gold currency. Because, you know, let's face it, if you walk into a pawn shop or a numismatic shop, if you hand him a Chinese panda or an Austrian Philharmonic or Australian, whatever, he's going to look at it, analyze it, and give you a little less than if it was a U.S. or Canadian coin. Or maybe, just maybe, if it's already crisis time, the reset button's been pushed, the feces has hit the ventilator, well, in that case, he might not want to buy or trade or barter for your Chinese pandas or Austrian Philharmonics at all. Because, you know, there's a lot of counterfeits going on, even now. In fact, I have a very nice report on how you can tell if any gold and silver coins you might be buying or handling have been counterfeited. You know, it's a huge industry in China now. What isn't? And all you guys and gals coming to my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar will be receiving that report. Wrote it myself. Well, most of it anyway. So these days, you really have to look out. They're even counterfeiting silver coins now. Used to be once in a while, a gold bar ingot would turn up counterfeit or partially counterfeit. You know, they'd drill out the inside and fill it with a base metal or mercury or tungsten. Whatever it takes to get the weight back up to do the mass and displacement measurements they take to see if it's real. That's one good reason you never want to buy a gold or silver bar or ingot. You can never really tell if it's been tampered with deep inside. But now the Chinese are even counterfeiting U.S. silver dollars and half dollars. I mean, look, modern silver dollars worth what in silver? Maybe 15 bucks. So you might think, is it worth it to go through all that trouble and make fake ones? Well, for the Chinese, it is, because they're doing it. And believe me, you and I could never tell by just looking or handling them. But in that little report I have, you'll find there are ways the common guy like you and me can tell instantly if it's been tampered with or completely fake, which is why you want to buy all your gold and silver at a pawn shop that's been around for a while or a numismatic outlet or any one of the big internet metals dealers. They'll never carry the counterfeit crap, only the high-grade stuff, because they're smarter than that. That's their business. Anyway, speaking of my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar, there's still time to get in on those early bird discounts. I'm holding them till the end of the month. That means on June 1st, regular price again, $500 more. So for all the details and sign-up information, go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. By the way, when you sign up, you periodically get an interesting little seminar message from me. There's six in all, kind of staggered over the weeks. And they'll answer all the questions you might have about coming down, what the seminar is all about, what to bring, what to pack, what not to pack. Those six messages address just about anything you might be thinking about before coming down. Because, you know, we make it a point of holding your hand through the whole process. Once you land at the airport, man, we're there. We take you right through it to the very last day. And, of course, the very last night, which is at a very neat restaurant. And we call it the Last Supper. All right, now comes a cool email from a guy named Dave who came down here and went through the Guatemala permanent residency process. You know, a lot of people send me emails saying, "Johnny, sounds like a big rigmarole. Sounds like someone's going to have to hold my hand through it. I don't know any Spanish." And they say, "What I've heard, Johnny, is it takes a big chunk out of your life. You got to stand in sweaty long lines for hours at a time. And sometimes when you get to the window, they close it and say, 'Hey, come back tomorrow or the next day or go to another office.' Or worse yet, you wrote on the wrong line or dotted the wrong I, and they'll tell you to come back with new paperwork. Ouch." Anyway, a lot of people thinking about the residency process, and of course, if you come out to the Expat Insider Seminar, you can kill two birds with one stone and apply for it and go to the seminar at the same time. So now, let me read you an email from Dave who came down and did the process. He says, "Hey, Johnny, I just wanted to say that as of Wednesday, I am now a permanent resident in Guatemala. I also wanted to tell you how much time I spent in either the immigration office or RENAP, which is the place where you stand in line, hurry up and wait, get in another line, get your fingerprints taken, hurry up and wait, get a picture done, fill out some more forms. Actually, your Latin lawyer or lawyer's assistants will do that. That's called RENAP in Guatemala, R-E-N-A-P, which stands for Registro Nacional de las Personas. Translation, National Registry of Persons. And wouldn't you know it, RENAP's always in a different building than the immigration office, so you'll be shuttling back and forth. That's how it goes down in all Latin countries when you're getting your temporary or permanent residency. And remember, every Latin country has an immigration office and a RENAP building, or two or three. And you'll have to shuttle back between both of them as you get your papers processed for permanent or temporary residency. Anyway, here's what Dave says and how it went for him. He says, Johnny, my first appointment with immigration was at 8 a.m. I stayed overnight at a big hotel, which is across the street from my lawyer's office. Then he says, Anna, the lawyer's assistant, took me to the immigration office in her car, and we got there right at 8 a.m. She walked me up, had someone take pictures of me with a cell phone, and then I sat down while she talked to everyone around the office. She floated around and seemed to know everyone there. I waited for a bit and was called up to the counter where I signed my name a few times, and then we left. 1 hour later, I was back on my motorcycle at 10 a.m., amazingly, and was out of Guatemala City in around 15 minutes. By the way, meet Johnny here. When you walk in one of those offices, you'll see hundreds, I'm talking about hundreds of people, just mulling around, sitting in chairs, standing in lines, organized chaos at its finest. Which is why it's so important to hook up with a Latin lawyer to walk you through it. Because for one thing, like Dave just said, the lawyer or the lawyer's assistants knows everyone in that office, and that's kind of like getting cuts, a free pass to the front of the line. All right, then Dave says, a week and a half earlier, I had my second appointment with immigration at 10:30 a.m., and the office was crowded, and I figured I was in for a long haul. Well, Anna, the lawyer's assistant, brought me into a small room on the side where someone took my pictures again with a computer this time. I got fingerprinted, signed a few more things, then I went out and sat down in the waiting room. And off goes Anna again, walking around and talking and schmoozing and mingling. I figured I'd have to go up to the counter again and sign my name and stuff sooner or later. But nope, she was just handling something, and I don't know what she was doing, but in about 10 minutes, she said, let's go. Unbelievable. Two times, I expected to be there for hours and hours, and so far, the total time I was there was about an hour and 20 minutes. Wow, no biggie. But it's not over yet. Dave says, 2 days ago, I found out at 10:30 a.m. that I have another 2:30 appointment at RENAP. Oh no, I'm far away in Panajachel. Couple hours at least. Good thing I've got a motorcycle. Well, I just hightailed it over there, and since I've made the trip a bunch of times, I know just about every pothole and tumulo that would be speed bump on the route. The first time I did that ride, I did it in 4 hours. I was able to get it down to 3 hours since I ride on the side of the road in Chichimaltenango, like every other motorcycle rider does. Yep, they know the shortcuts all right, legal or not. I got to the office in just over 2.5 hours this time. I even had time to go across the street and get something at McDonald's before my RENAP appointment. Dave, shame on you. Unless, of course, Dave, you just went in there to buy some of that fine Guatemalan coffee. Yes, they serve Guatemalan coffee in McDonald's. The best stuff, too. Oh, and this might blow your mind. Did you know that throughout Latin America, wherever there's a McDonald's, if you buy a combo or complete meal, whatever, Happy Meals, who knows? I never buy that stuff. But I've been in many Latin McDonald's to have little meetups. You know, those are centralized places where people who are meeting up will often say, hey, let's meet at McDonald's and do this. They're logical choices because everybody knows where they are and they're nice, safe, and centrally located. Doesn't mean you have to put that crap in your body. However, they do have 100% high-end Guatemalan coffee for like a buck and a half. Now, where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. In all the McDonald's and Burger Kings and such in Latin America, when you order one of the combo or deluxe plates, it automatically comes with tortillas. Hey, come on. Try getting tortillas at your McDonald's in Cleveland. But I digress. Man, did I digress. Anyway, Dave goes on to say, this time, Johnny, I walked with Anna, the lawyer's assistant, right through RENAP. How long was I in that RENAP office this time? About 45 minutes. That means I spent only about 2 hours with three different appointments in the Guatemalan bureaucracy. I'm going to call that a win. Johnny, I can't imagine the insane amount of time a Guatemalan has to deal with if they wanted to migrate to the U.S. legally. I'd say, and it's me, Johnny, here again, that's certainly why so many of them prefer just jumping the fence. Then Dave says, "So, I was truly expecting the worst, but it was so frickin' easy to immigrate here. Well, as long as you have the right people on your side walking you through and holding your hand." All right, everyone. How's that for a boots-on-the-ground story and what it takes to get your permanent or temporary residency in Guatemala? Then finally, Dave says, "Johnny, it's ironic that I got all this done just before I'm leaving to go back to Florida for a little while. I've got to tie up some loose ends and get rid of all my stuff in storage. I'm going to work for a bit there so I can come back with more money and get a better place, this time in Antigua, Guatemala. Now, the lake area that I was living in, Lake Atitlan, often called the most beautiful lake in the world, is extra nice, but there's not a lot to do there. I went native and started doing exactly what you said, Johnny, in a recent show. You know, hitting the gringo bar at noon. Can't believe it. 49 years in the U.S. and I rarely went to bars. And I never did it alone, but here at the lake, it's like living in the sitcom Cheers. Everyone knows who you are and you can go to just about any gringo bar and you'll know almost everyone in there, too. By the way, Dave's talking about the first little town you end up in when you're coming off the big main Pan American Highway when driving to the Lake Atitlan region. That first little town is called Panajachel. Turns out, you know, there are around 12 other little towns around the lake, but you have to take a boat or a little lancha, a launch, to get there. So the place he's talking about can be reached by car or motorcycle, which is why it's got that kind of gringo eco-backpacker style about it. And in fact, some people never get beyond that little town to see the rest of the other towns around the lake. Because you see, you have to take a boat. Makes things a little more difficult. That's why so many laid-back gringos and expats end up in Panajachel and become flesh and blood Jimmy Buffett songs. And finally, Dave says, "By the way, Johnny, my motorcycle is for sale if you know anyone who's looking for one. It's a 2017 Suzuki 125 that I rejetted for a higher altitude and did oil changes and adjusted the chain every 1,000 kilometers. Maintenance, they call that maintenance, Dave, and only gringos do that. That's why Latinos love to buy stuff from us." Then he says, "I have just under 6,500 kilometers on it now." He says, "Johnny, I paid just under $2,000 for it and will sell it for around $1,400. Then he attached a few pictures for me. He says, "Anyway, Johnny, thanks for all your help and advice via the show and responding to my emails. This last year has been way better than I thought it would be," and he capitalizes way. Well, Dave, thanks for that play-by-play and blow-by-blow immigration story. I'm sure it'll ease a lot of people's minds as to how it gets done. However, just one thing, Dave. Do you have some kind of a death wish or something driving a motorcycle on the highways in Guatemala or anywhere in Latin America? Especially on a small bike like that. What's it, 125 cc's, right? Well, I have to say you have more cojones than I'll ever have. However, my grandma used to say, when you hit 50, you should do something on your birthday you never would have done at a younger age because, well, it just scared the hell out of you. Like, for example, skydiving. And then she said, when you hit 60, do another scary birthday stunt, like hang gliding. Then she said, when you hit 70, if those other two stunts didn't kill you, paraglide or scuba dive. Or perhaps go to Japan and eat one of those crazy poisonous puffer fish meals. And if you reach 80, how about a nice ayahuasca trip for your birthday? What she was saying was, as you get older, take more risks, not less. At least on your birthday. Hey, I'm all for that. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to take the Vomit Comet. You know that plane that simulates weightlessness for, what's it, like half a minute at a time and they give you 15 tries. I understand the traditional Vomit Comet from NASA runs around $5,000, but there's a new one from a Swiss company called Swiss Space Systems. It's only $2,000. Hey, who wants to come with me? All right, let's do another email. This one's from Don. He says, "Hello, Johnny Mueller. I plan to arrive the first week in June in Guatemala. Thanks for all the great tips. Now, I was listening to the 316 2018 show, number 742, about internet plans with 150 gigabytes from a company called Tigo for $30. Now, that doesn't sound right to me," he says. 150 gigabytes is a massive amount of data and unlikely to be available for only $30 a month, as you say. He says, "Looking at the Tigo website, that's T-I-G-O, that's one of the cell companies here, the best plan I can see is 20 gigabyte a month for around $70. Then he gives me the website link. Then he says, same with The Movie Star Company, that's M-O-V-I-S-T-A-R, that's a European cell company that does internet here in Latin America, they give you 100 hours of YouTube included for free, which is like an extra 50 gigs, but actually you only get around 20 gigabytes of 4G at $70 a month. It's a very competitive plan, he says, the best I can tell. Then he gives me the links there. Then he says, you also mentioned a Tigo plan, that's T-I-G-O, that has unlimited internet for $30 a month, and I don't see it on their website. Some unlimited calling plans are there and unlimited music streaming, but none for unlimited internet. Maybe with a smartphone they give you, you get unlimited on your phone. That would be good if you use your phone as a hotspot with your laptop or Android. So he says, that's what I've found, Johnny. All right, thanks for that, Don Donny, but let me give you the true scoop on this. I am right now, as we're speaking, using a 75 gigabyte per month upload and download capacity Movistar system that costs me exactly $22 a month. And if I want to upgrade to 150 gigabytes, it'll cost me slightly more than $30 a month. You see, the thing is, Don Donny, you have to walk into these stores and talk with the salespeople, and they don't speak English, believe me. The thing is, this is Latin America, so you can't always go by the promotional pieces or what you see on the internet. By the way, I also know of a couple of people who are using Tigo modems and getting unlimited internet. Like I said, you have to walk in there in person and let the salesman pitch that stuff to you. Now, it all depends if you're on a contract plan or not. I'm not. That means I walk in there every month and pay cash. However, with a contract plan, that means you have to give up some dats, you know, your passport and stuff. That's where a little photoshopping comes in handy, by the way. Then you see they tie it to your bank account and there's a monthly electronic withdrawal. Or you can go in every month and pay cash too. But as for me, I prefer to remain anonymous and thus use non-contract plans. So as it turns out, there are many plans to choose from in both the contract and non-contract plans. And I found that the unlimited internet option pretty much is exclusive to the contract plans. But it seems every 3 to 6 months, there's a technology upgrade and things change. So what I'm telling you right now might not exactly be correct in 2 or 3 months. So bottom line, I hope you speak Spanish or you have some bilingual someone to tag along with when you're checking out those plans. Oops, we're getting towards the end of the show now, so I won't be able to finish that bit on Nicaragua. But I'll do it next time, I promise.
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.